I'll mix and match.
Okay, our next speaker is Rory McGuire. Rory McGuire. Say that fast 10 times in a row. And he's going to talk about poultry litter biochar and how it affects soil and plants. Go ahead, Rory.
Well, congratulations on being here on the last afternoon. Before we start, I'd like to thank my co-authors. Ken Revel is my master's student who actually did the work. Foster Aglovar is a biological systems engineer, and he does the pyrolysis. He's got a nice pyrolysis unit, and I'm a soil fertility guy. So I'm looking at what happens when you apply the biochar to the soil. So first of all, why would anybody want to make biochar out of poultry litter? There's not very much of it compared to wood or grasses or other things. But when you look at the distribution of manure production compared to how much is taken up by crops, you see some areas, these dark areas, they have much more phosphorus produced in manure than local crops require. So areas close to where I live in Virginia, the Shenandoah Valley here, the Eastern Shore, there's more poultry litter produced, there's more phosphorus in that than local crops require. So there's a lot of interest in alternative uses. What are the other things we can do? If we can reduce the volume and the weight, it makes transport a lot easier, and if we can get it back to areas where the phosphorus is needed and have some benefit in that, get a value-added product, it would make transport a lot more economically feasible. This is a look at the pyrolysis unit. If you have any questions about this, I don't really understand how on earth the thing works. It looks like an oil refinery as far as I'm concerned. So this is the bit that Foster Aglovar does. I just take what it puts out for the biochar. But it's got an elevator. It's about the size of a tractor trailer. You can see it's got the wheels here. It's got an elevator where the poultry litter goes in. This is a research unit. It can do about 4 tons of poultry litter a day. It's got a fluidized bed reactor. He's been doing pyrolysis at about 450 degrees centigrade. You can see the pipes coming out here. So he's collecting bio-oil. And then there are a lot of condensers and so on, but then the biochar comes out, and that's what I'm using. Just to give you an idea of the scale of this, but it's, we were talking, some of the earlier presenters were talking about temperature, and this was produced at, the biochar I'm talking about was produced at about 450 degrees Celsius. So what are the objectives of this work? Evaluate the effects of the poultry litter biochar on soil. I'm sure everybody's familiar with the Terra preta, so we're trying to reproduce some of those beneficial characteristics: increased water capacity, increased cation exchange capacity, increased nutrient use efficiency. So we're also looking at some plant growth issues. So the methods, first of course, we need to analyze the biochar, the pH. Poultry litter has a pH of about 8, so we expect it to have a fairly high pH. Combustion and digestion. The first thing we did was submit it to the manure analysis lab. And when we did the calculations, it just didn't add up. When you just do an acid digest of a biochar, you don't get all the nutrients out. But if you combust it first in a muffle furnace, drive all the carbon off, then it's pretty easy to analyze for all your phosphorus, potassium, and calcium. And we just used a LECO analyzer for the carbon and nitrogen. We then did a lettuce germination. Lettuce germination is a very common way to test for toxicity. So we did a lettuce germination of everything between 0% biochar to 100% biochar by weight with a silt loam and a sandy loam soil. I've done a lot of incubation studies with different things, and if you use 10 different soils, there'll be one at the bottom, which tends to be the sandy soil, and one at the top that tends to be a silt or a clay loam, and all the ones in between are somewhere in between. So we've got the range of soil types here. We have a very, very sandy soil and fairly fine textured soil. We just grew 30 seeds for 10 days, which is enough for the lettuce seeds to germinate. And after the 10 days, we took the soil and looked at pot capacity, which is another way of measuring waterhole capacity. We were going to use pressure plates, which is the more scientific way to measure waterholding capacity. But when the person who owned the pressure plates looked at how fine the biochar was, they wouldn't let me anywhere near them. So we measured pot capacity, where you saturate a soil in a small cup, let it drain for 2 days, so it's an approximation. It's fairly close to water holding capacity. We also looked at soluble salts. I think somebody earlier had a question about salts and poultry litter, biochar, pH, and malic 1 and Olsen P. Malic 1 is an acid extraction. Olsen P is an alkali extraction. Getting on to results, looking at some of the biochar analysis. This is the carbon, nitrogen, and ash. Two poultry litter biochars. We were collecting this stuff constantly. These two samples were collected about a year apart, so we expected them to be fairly similar. And this is the Sequest biochar from Dynamotive. It's a hardwood biochar, but this is the one we used in the greenhouse study. So you can see about something about a quarter carbon by weight. Nitrogen, very little nitrogen, and most of the nitrogen is lost during the pyrolysis process. And the ash, because of the salts, all the calcium, potassium, etc., it's got quite a high ash content. We're kind of surprised the hardwood had a reasonable ash content, but we think it's because it was produced from, as I understand it, a plant that's connected to a wood processing facility. So we think there must have been quite a lot of bark in it and maybe some dirt from the handling. When we look at phosphorus, when I started working on this, there were a lot of questions about phosphorus. Is it going to be plant available if you put it through the pyrolysis process? Can you put it back in a high phosphorus soil? So this is the phosphorus concentration. The blue bar is total P. The black bar is water-soluble P for the two different biochars, poultry litter biochars collected a year apart in the hardwood. And what we see is the total P is about 5%, something like 50 grams per kilogram. But water solubility, when you put this stuff in water, it doesn't release the phosphorus, so the phosphorus in it is fairly stable. And the hardwood has very little phosphorus in it. What about calcium and potassium? Quite a lot of both. We expected that because there's a lot in the poultry litter, and it's not lost during the pyrolysis process. They're looking at about 8-9% by weight of, or 7-9% by weight of calcium and potassium. And again, very little in the hardwood biochar. pHs, again, poultry litter has a pH of about 8, so it's not surprising that the biochar made from that is also alkali, so the pH is above 9 compared to the hardwood char, which is a slightly acidic, fairly close to neutral pH. So we expect when you apply these to soils, they're going to increase the pH. Getting on to the germination study, this is percent germination, 0 to 80. We never quite got 100%. And the two different bar colors, the light bars for the silt loam, the brown bars for the sandy loam. And across the bottom is the percentage biochar by weight, 0% being 100% soil and 100% being 100% biochar. And you can see the lettuce germinate fairly well, up to about 2.5%. And about 2.5%, there's a big drop-off in germination of the lettuce seeds. One small interesting point is we actually get an increase from 0% to 0.2%. This is actually statistically significant just for the sandy loam. And we think that just by looking at it when we were doing the experiment, the biochar coated the seed. And with just getting watered twice a day, we think it was helping keeping moisture up against the seed in the sandy soil. The silt loam's got a lot of fine particles that can attach to the seed and keep moisture up against it, whereas the sandy soil doesn't. So the biochar might have kept a little extra moisture against the seed and helped the germination. When you look at the actual rate, 2.5% by weight is roughly equivalent to 112 tons per hectare, megagrams per hectare. So that, if you're talking about a single application, you're talking about a huge application before you get into any germination problems. If you remember the total phosphorus concentration as well, it was about 5%. So if you talk about adding what you're going to do if you add 100, over 100 tons per hectare, to get salt toxicity, what we think salt toxicity, at this rate you're applying more than 5 tons of phosphorus per acre. So you're going to be limited by phosphorus long before you get limited by toxicity. When we look at pot capacity, again, the course study, the course measurement of water holding capacity, you can see a very rapid increase from 0% biochar to 100% biochar. This is for the sandy loam. So the water holding capacity went from about 15 to 70. So it's a pretty linear reaction. The more biochar you add, the more water holding capacity you get. That's for the sandy loam. This is for the silt loam. Instead of starting at 15, it starts at 40 because it's got more finer particles. It's better at holding water. But it's got the same general idea. It goes up to about 70%. So one of the things out of this, we think biochar might be better for low-quality soils or soils that have problems. If you add biochar to a good-quality soil, you're not going to see quite as much benefit as if you apply it to a very poor-quality soil, a soil that can't hold water. Looking at the soluble salts, we've got a lot of points on here. Down here is where you get salt toxicity, down about 2.5%, which is close to where we saw the drop-off in germination for the silt loam and the sandy loam. And then look up here, this is what the biochar is. But we just took the biochar, rinsed it with water one time, and you can wash the salts right out. So if you're worried about salt toxicity, it's pretty easy to wash the salts right out. Looking at the pH of the soil, soil started around pH 7, and as you'd expect, adding something that's got a pH of over 9, it's got a very strong... We did a rough calculation. Its calcium carbonate equivalency was about 25%, so we've got a very alkali material. Yeah, this is my most exciting slide, so those of you at the back that are asleep, wake up a little bit, pay attention. So this is phosphorus, extractable phosphorus by Malik and Olson. This line is for the Malik one. The solid ones are for the Olson extraction, which is alkali. What you see is the Malik extraction, which is acid, extracts a lot of phosphorus very quickly, and then it drops off, probably because the high pH material is neutralizing the acid. Whereas with the alkali extractant, you get a more steady increase. But again, with the Malic 1 extraction, the cutoff for agronomic use is about 55. Above that, you don't need to apply any more phosphorus. So you're going to be phosphorus limited when you apply this stuff rather than salt limited. So a few conclusions before the moderator comes running over. Poultolitter biochar has a high carbon content, obviously. It has a high pH. It has a lot of phosphorus in it, 5%. It has a lot of potassium, calcium, which are beneficial as long as you don't overapply them. But the problem is low nitrogen. It doesn't have a lot of that in it. It's lost to the atmosphere during pyrolysis. Increased water holding capacity, which has been reported for quite a lot of different types of biochar. The more you add, it's a linear response. It can have toxic effects, but only for very, very high rates. At normal agronomic rates, you wouldn't find any problems with the salts at all. It would be more like a fertilizer. Measurement of plant available phosphorus needs more study. When you take something like poultolitter that has a lot of calcium in it, a lot of phosphorus, you put it up at 450 degrees Celsius, you're probably forming apatite, fairly crystallized calcium phosphate. So if you add an acid extractant, it'll dissolve it. If you add an alkali one, it'll get some of it out. But how much does the plant find available? I really don't know. But it is some of it's going to be plant available, but I don't know if it's going to be equivalent to phosphorus fertilizers. Last point, poultolitter biochar needs to be exported from areas of high soil test phosphorus. Areas that have a lot of animal agriculture generally have high soil test phosphorus because of repeated manure applications at nitrogen-based rates that over-apply phosphorus. But this stuff, by pyrolyzing it, you're reducing the weight by 60%. So you're having a value-added product that's a lot lighter and a lot cheaper to transport. Thank you.
You're quite right in your guess about appetite being present. You can show by X-ray diffraction that appetite's a major constituent bitter ash. And of course, using an acid extractant on a material which is a mixture of calcium carbonate, calcite, and appetite, you essentially you're dissolving the appetite from fertilizer, not from the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's so much lime present that the extractant stops being effective at very high rates.
Yeah.
Support
your findings. Yeah, that's why we did Malic 1 because that's the soil test in the routine agronomic soil test in my state. But I was suspicious of the results adding something with a high pH. That's why I did the Olson as well. So it's good to know you find the appetite by what?
We published exactly these results.
Oh, yeah, I'm interested. Thank you.